Thank you, Zoe. And our group has asked Nick to be our main speaker tonight.
It's good that you put it up here. I'm short, so you probably wouldn't see me from down there. thanks again for asking me to speak. I really appreciate it. And I was asked to speak on what it used to be like, what happened, and what it's like now. great lead, by the way. You got a lot of the same suggestions I got in the beginning. It was always kind of like a monkey see, monkey do thing. Like, this is what we do. Come and try it. Or not, you know? That's how it was for me. We keep trying it your way. I was like, it's not what? I took it very personally. But anyways, what it used to be like. I loved drinking. That was obvious. I loved it. I loved what alcohol did for me. If I had known, like, what alcohol would do for me at the age of 5, I would have been drinking at 5. I don't know about anybody else, but I never felt like I quite like fit in. I always felt like the square peg in the round hole. Like, I just never like clicked with anybody. Like, the athletes, I wasn't good enough athlete. Like, the smart kids, I wasn't smart enough, right? The good looking people, I'm not good looking enough. Whatever it was, like, I just never felt like I fit in. And it was a struggle just like getting through like grade school and high school and everything like that. I didn't know why. Like, I didn't know why life was such a struggle. I did everything like the wrong way. I couldn't even do, like, I would literally at age, like, in first grade, like, trying to cheat, like, on assignments and stuff, right? And that would just like carry on. And I somehow still got F's all the time. Like, it was insane. Like, I literally couldn't do the wrong thing the right way. Like, I wasn't cheating off the right person or whatever the case may be. And, I learned something in AA, and I'm going to step forward and then pull it back. Is it talked about in the doctor's opinion about being restless, irritable, and discontent. And I was feeling that from a very young age. I don't know about anybody else. Like, I always felt, like, very tight. I couldn't sleep at night, even as a young kid. I'd be, like, counting cracks on the ceiling. Like, I literally just wanted to take, like, a dull butter knife and just, like, rip my own skin off. Like, I just never felt comfortable in my own skin at all. I was irritable, right? My mom would be like, Nick, what are you doing? I'd be like, just shut up. Like, you know what I mean? Like, no matter what, like, she would be talking, and I'd just get pissed off for no reason, right? She'd give me, like, real things. Like, Nick, what do you want for lunch? Like, I don't care. Like, make whatever. Like, stop asking me questions. I'm busy, right? Doing what? Playing video games? Like, that was my life. Then as time went on, I discontent. This is another good one, too, is whatever I have is never enough. So, like, as a kid, growing up, I had family members who, they did really well. They were successful. They had nice houses and things like that. And I always, like, compared myself to them. Like, what I had wasn't enough. Like, I always wanted more. I'd go to these family parties, and they had big families and multiple brothers and sisters and this and that. I'm like, oh, I only got one brother. I'm not good enough. You know, they have a nice mansion. We live in, like, a two-flat apartment in Chicago. I'm from Chicago, and that's, you know, you too? Oh, nice. There we go. Go Bears, too, yeah. Now, I'm not going to get into sports. Sorry, I'll be quiet about that. This was just like a revolving door my entire childhood. Like, it was just total chaos, right? Like, kids were going out on, like, field trips and things like that. I would always be, like, the one who got, like, way too many detentions and way too much trouble to even, like, join anybody on those trips, right? Like, they'd be going to, like, Navy Pier in Chicago or wherever. I was, like, this close to not going on the ski trip, too. Like, that would have been brutal. That was, like, eighth grade year. I was just in so much trouble. Like, they're like, Nick, you're doing everything you can not to go on this trip right now. I'm like, leave me alone. I was just a terrible, I just treated people very bad and was just a total pain. I mean, my sixth grade teacher, I mean, God bless him, he dealt with some bad stuff with me. So as time went on, I got into high school, and But like right before high school in eighth grade, I found alcohol. I found a group of kids in Chicago. They went to this school called St. Juliana's, and these kids were like, I met them in eighth grade, but they were already like seasoned drinkers. Like they had the guy like Julio and Juan down the block like to buy them liquor. He lived in like a shack, and you know, they would pay him like $40 to get him like a 20 bottle Bacardi or whatever the case may be, and they had it down to like a science already. I was like, this is interesting. And one of my friends that I went to like basketball camp with, he kind of brought me in with them, and because we were all going to the same high school, and you know, I met these guys, and it was interesting. I was at like a Wendy's. There was a lot of people there. It was like 20 of them. I had just met them, and like I was just, I don't know about anybody else, but like I couldn't talk. Like I was so crazy. Like the thoughts, like that restless irritable and discontent, just like it ran in my head like a hamster on a hamster wheel. Like it was just flying, right? Like a transformer on overload. My mind just went so fast at such a young age, and I had no idea how to slow it down. And like all these people are like, "Hey, Nick, how are you?" I'm like, "Hey," like just like put my hands in my pocket, like just freaking out, right? And as soon as alcohol went into my system that night, and they were like, "Yeah, we're gonna get this this liquor. We know this homeless guy that will buy it for us and stuff like that." I'm like, "Great, perfect, I'm in." And I tried it, and I literally took a sip of the Bacardi and just like threw it all up. And I'm like, "Make sure that goes in." Like we had it in rotation with like six other people and stuff. I'm like, make sure that gets back around to me. Like, I didn't care. I just knew, like, the way it made me feel, it was like a magic trick. Like, immediately, I felt calmer. Like, I was talking to all them. You know, I was hugging the guys. I was able to talk to the girls. I felt loose, right? That's what alcohol did for me. It made me feel connected. It made me feel a part of. I had been searching all my life. Like, my mom was trying all different kinds of Ritalins and all different kinds of, like, different things to like try and slow me down. Like it was just not working. So there was times where like my brother's in AA too, and he's just as crazy as I am. She would like have to like sneak and like put it in like our food to like for us to take it, because like we would just refuse. We were just a total, you know, pain in the you don't want. So it was a nightmare for my parents growing up. And but alcohol, fast forward, it did a lot for me. It made me feel connected. I loved it. I loved what alcohol did for me. All of a sudden, I can talk to everybody. I feel calm. I feel connected. And the next day, I was so hungover. I was like, I don't care. I want to do that again. And it talks about in the big book, like, you know, when it says you have arrived, that's how I felt. Like, I felt like I had arrived. Like, I finally figured out life. I'm just going to drink the rest of my life. I'm going to drink every weekend. This is going to be great. And that's what I did. And 6 months after that, that was like in eighth grade, and then high school came around. Things were starting to like get good on the outside, like the material stuff, right? Like I was in high school. I was like, I know this is going to be hard to believe, but I was the starting point guard of the basketball team. I know I'm short, but I was okay. I wasn't good, but I was good enough to make the team. And I had a cool girlfriend and all this stuff. It all like looked good on the outside. And then shortly after that, I cheated on my girlfriend. She dumped me, shocker. And then by sophomore year of high school, I quit the basketball team. I had gotten a fight with a coach. I guess supposedly you're not supposed to say the F word to your coaches. It's not a good thing. I didn't know that. At that time, I didn't know. I was like, this is just how you talk to people. And they kicked, you know, I got in a fight. He threw a ball at me too. And I held that resentment for a really long time. I deserved to get the ball thrown at me too, the way I was acting. It was bad. And my mom came in and caused a whole scene. It was bad. And then I got kicked out of high school by like sophomore year. And I had failed the drug test. Try not to get into too many outside issues, but I failed the drug test for early sophomore year. And then they're like, all right, if your scores come down or you get rid of it, like, we won't kick you out. My score is, like, tripled. I was out. They're like, you got to go, dude. And they're like, Nick, if you had maybe, like, were, like, a straight-A student and, like, were doing well, like, we would keep you here. But you don't even seem like you want to be here. And he was right. I had three Fs. You know, I everything was just It was just terrible. Again, cheating, still not passing any classes. I don't know how that's possible. I figured it out, though, how to fail and cheat at the same time. I went to a school that, like, a bunch of people, like, it had, like, kind of a bad reputation in Chicago, and I went there because that's what happens when you get kicked out of I went to Catholic schools growing up, and I ended up going to a public school out there and barely squeaked by. I had ditched my, like, 7th and 8th period classes every day for, like, the first, like, 3 months. And my aunt was friends with, like, the vice principal there. So she, like wrote a note to the teachers and said, let them pass and, like, things like that. And she bailed me out. I mean, she saved me. She was the only reason why I got a high school diploma. And I remember my first period teacher when I graduated was like, Nick, you're not dumb, but don't ever miss class the way you miss this class ever again. And I was like, we'll see about that. Shortly after that, as time went on, of course, like, I lost jobs and, you know, because I didn't show up. That was, like, my whole life. I didn't show up for anything. I didn't know how to show up for anything. The part in the rule, you know, in the life manual, like, you know, show up on time and, you know, dress appropriately, talk appropriately. I didn't get that handbook. I missed that one. I was a complete recluse at a very young age, getting in handcuffs and different things like that, seeking out fights for no reason. It was terrible. And I mean, it was fun at the time, but looking back at it, I was a bad kid. I'll start getting into how destructive the drinking got. So I used to spend a lot of time with my brother and his drinking buddies and stuff. And again, I'm the square peg in the round hole. So, like, I just wanted to fit in with people. And I think they just, like, felt bad for me at that point. And they were just like, yeah, just come hang out with us, dude. Like, that's fine. Like, everybody was spending, like, $300-$400 at nightclubs to, like, get bottles and table service. And I would, like, sneak my friend $100 and, like, sometimes not even pay him. Be like, oh, I got you. I'll get you back, man. Don't worry about it. I got you. And, like, never pay them or anything like that. And but they let me hang out. And as time went on, my drinking just got progressively worse. My grandparents had passed away, and they had lived with me, and I was using every excuse I could, like family members dying or whatever the case may be, to, like, justify my drinking. And, you know, I started noticing there was, like, a problem because, like, I would go to these nightclubs or bars or whatever, and then I would go home and just start, like, drinking by myself and hanging out in, you know, my parents' basement, just, like, getting blitzed, right? I was, like, working one day a week as, like, a door guy in, like, Bucktown of Chicago. And it was every Tuesday night. And then when Tuesday came around, I'm like, man, I don't want to work. Like, can I get out of the shift? I'm, like, texting people, like, seeing if I can get out of it and stuff like that. It was crazy. And I rep basketball, too, and I hated that. And, you know, I just made my life a living hell for my entire family. So what do I do? First thing I do, I'm like, I'm going to get a therapist, right? I'm going to get a drug and alcohol counselor. And This is it, right? Like, I texted a friend, and you know, he told me that he had some problems in the past with, like, cocaine or whatever. And, you know, I reached out to him before, you know, he said he went to therapy. So I'm like, all right, I'll try this. So I started going to therapy, you know, I was talking to her, and this was right around 2016 when the Cubs won the World Series. So, like, there was all kinds of justifications going on in my head at that time. I was going to therapy, and I actually got, like, a couple months of not drinking, but my behavior was, like, staying the same, if that makes sense. Like, that analogy that you hear, like, you sober up a drunken horse thief, what do you got? You still got a horse thief. So, like, when I stop drinking, I just turn right to my character defects. Like, that's what I know to do, is to go to that. So I tried the therapy route for a while, and I was talking to her, and, you know, having conversations, and, like, I was getting a lot of relief, and it was preventing me from drinking. However, it wasn't, like, for me at least, I'm not here to downgrade doctors or whatever, this is just my experience, right? Like, I had noticed, like, as time went on, like, I don't know if this is actually working, because, like, I'm doing shadier stuff than I was drinking. It was crazy, and I would get, like, a couple months, but then I would always go right back to drinking. So, Cubs won the World Series, you know, big blowout. I went crazy. I was like drinking for like a month after that. And then it was like 2 months later after they had already won. And my friends, you know, I was trying to like, I was talking to my therapist, like got like another month clean or at least another month from not drinking. And then eventually she was like, you know, she noticed like I wasn't listening to her. She would like stop me and be like, Nick, I don't know if you're listening because I'm talking and then you're kind of like talking over me and like not really listening. I'm like, oh, yeah, I heard what you said. I know what you said. I couldn't tell you right now one thing she told me. I have no idea. Not one thing. I'm just so self-consumed, so self-centered. And I started talking to her and I was getting, but I noticed I was like getting relief from it. And that's why I was going. It was, you know, I was even taking a train. I was, at that point, I was somewhat desperate to like do something different because like my life was just like total chaos. And so as time went on, like I said, it was like 2 months after the Cubs won the World Series. My buddy's like, hey, you want to go out? And I'm like, well, the Cubs did win the World Series 2 months ago, so I got to keep celebrating. Like, I got to keep this going. I was finding any reason I could. And it just like turned into a snowball effect. And then like January of 2017, my grandma passed away. And I was living with her and like taking care of her for like the last like few months of her life. And I actually had like, I was out in like California with my cousin and I had gotten a call about what had happened. And like, it's so sick like how my thinking was. Like, obviously I was sad about my grandma, but my mind ran right to, well, now I got a reason to drink, right? Like that's how sick I am. Is like, I was always looking for any excuse to get drunk. So I did that, burned it all to the ground. It was, by February of 2017, it was a nightmare. I was probably like 50, 60 pounds heavier than I am now. I probably haven't showered in days. I'm in my basement, it's a blizzard outside, and Tom Brady had just won that Super Bowl in 2017 where he had that crazy comeback. The Bears always suck, so like I was like, I gotta cheer for somebody. And so I went crazy, and I got really drunk, and I was down to my last like 40 bucks. And so I call, I had no air in my tires of my bike, it's a blizzard outside. But I'm like, I got to keep this going as long as humanly possible. And so I call my drug dealer, who's, you know, not a good person. You know, the last time I had seen him, we were doing some like drugs off like a gun. You know what I mean? Like, that's like, it's not like the bedrock of mental health, this guy. Like, it was just a, it's not the person you call when you're struggling. Let's just put it that way. And I met up with him, and you know, I had 40 bucks in the ATM, and I'm riding my bike in the snow, like blizzard, no air in the tires. This is like a mile away from my house, and I'm riding in the snow. I'm like, I'm getting this bag. Like, there's nothing stopping me from keeping my, because that's what I did. I always use that stuff to like continue drinking. And I'm riding in the snow. I get to his place, and I realize there's an ATM right by him, but there's a $2.50 service charge, so I couldn't get the $40. And I'm like, I can only get 20. So I'm like begging this guy, like, dude, please give it to me for $20. Like, I'll pay you back, man. Like, I'm like on my knees begging this guy. It's like, this is like a gangbanger in Chicago. It's just like ridiculous. He gave it to me and I ended up paying him back. But by the end of it, it was just, I was just like in the fetal position. I couldn't take it anymore. And it was so bad. And my dad like came down like, what's wrong with you? You know, there's beers all over my bedroom. And I'm just like, you know, grandma died and this and that. I'm just like, he's just like, wow, dude. Like, don't get me wrong. I love my grandma. But she was 95 years old and lived a great life. Like, that was, yeah, like, she was amazing. Like, and I don't think, like, burning my life to the ground is, like, what she wanted for me. And so what do? I moved to California. I'm like, I need a geographical change. It's too cold in Chicago. There's too much snow. I need to be somewhere where, you know, the warmer weather should do it, right? And I wound up in Vegas at one point. I don't know how that happened. It was just a complete nightmare. I thought I was like getting in with some job to like, I don't know, like teach kids with like autism how to like write puzzles or something. Like, and I'm serious. I'm not like joking about that. I'm not being like that. That's what my job was going to be. And then I didn't end up getting it. And I was like so mad. And then I was like, this is ridiculous. Like, I'm moving back. Like, it's California's fault. I'm like, what the hell? Like, it was just ridiculous. And so I, at the end of the trip, I was like, I ended up in Vegas, blacked out, don't know what happened, lost my hotel room and stuff. And my cousins eventually found me and got me on a plane and shipped me back to Chicago. They're probably like, get rid of this guy. Like, because I started living with my aunt and my cousins over there in California. And it was just, you know, because I had worked with, the reason I brought the Cubs up too was like, I worked at, I don't know if anyone knows about Wrigley, but they have the Wrigley rooftops behind Wrigley Field. I worked at those during the World Series. So they had asked me to like come back and work, and I was like, yeah, I'll do it. So I thought like, if I just get a job, like that'll be the answer. Like that'll solve all my problems. And of course, about a month into that, I got a new therapist, and it turned bad really fast again. I took like a double stacked ecstasy, probably like this big, after a Cubs game at Spring Awakening. It's like kind of like their Gasparilla in Chicago. It's at like Soldier Field or right around there. And I just like was out. It was just bad. And I woke up and like my best friends, they didn't want to talk to me. Nobody wanted to talk to me. My ma came down and she had heard about the situation. I guess I caused a big scene in the neighborhood and stuff. So I lived there in Chicago, not far from Wrigley Field. I lived there for, 25 years. And so I knew all my neighbors and stuff. So, of course, like, they found out, and like, we're going to fill my mom in on what was going on. I guess I was going crazy and went nuts on my best friend and his girlfriend and stuff. And they wanted to, like, go to bed, I guess, and I wanted to keep partying and stuff, and, like, I was calling that guy again with the gun, trying to, like, keep going. I was at that point, like, where I just didn't care. Like, I hated myself. Like, I hated myself to the core. Like, I was ending up at, like, places, like, after clubs, like, you just don't want to go. Like, I had heard there was this place called The Rift, and it opened at, like, 4 o'clock in the morning, and, like, it was, like, one of those, like, illegal places that, like, aren't known, and, like, people would be getting shot there. And I'm like, I don't care, I'll go. Like, it doesn't matter to me. Like, I just want to keep drinking. I just didn't want to feel that restless, irritable, discontent feeling at all. But back then, I didn't know what it was. So that's kind of what happened, segueing into what happened. That was like the beginning of the end. My mom came down after that and like, Nick, what is going on? Like, everyone said, like, you woke the whole neighborhood up. You were going crazy. BJ... that was my friend's name, BJ, and he found you in the middle of an intersection, just laying on the street. I'm like, oh, really? Oh, I didn't know. Like, and he's just like, what's wrong with you? I'm like, me? What's wrong with you, Ma? Like, you've been drinking like crazy. You were crying at the family party and stuff. Like, I was like deflecting at all costs. Like, she's like, Nick, they found you in the middle of an intersection. And for some reason, something clicked inside my head. Like, something was like, okay, like, I kind of, like, stopped, like, arguing with her. I was like, okay, this is bad. Like, I can't justify it any longer. Like, my drinking is just completely out of control. Every time I get drunk, like, I'm reaching out. Like, I have, like, missed calls and calls to, like, people I don't know. And, like, all kinds of crazy stuff was going on. And I went back to therapy and started talking to her about what was going on. And after I told her that situation, her face was just kind of lit up. I'm like, I don't know what to do. She's just like, yeah, you got to do something more than this. Like, one day a week is not enough for you. Like, you're too crazy. Like, you need more than that, right? So I'm like, she doesn't know what she's talking about. And so I a couple months later in August, I had seen my friend, and I was at a wedding, right? And he just came into like the reception part of it. And I had actually was in therapy, and I wasn't really like drinking that night. I had like one beer, and I seen him, and I was like, oh boy, he's probably gonna want to go out tonight. If he wants to go out, I'll probably go out. And I talked to my cousin. He's like, nah, dude, that dude's sober. I was like, what? I was like, yeah, man, he's sober. I was like, wow. Like, the last time I seen him, he was at after hours spot, and he was in bad shape, like just like me. That's how I knew. I was like, He was a, you know, crazy Irish Catholic guy in Chicago, and you know, he was sober like multiple years, and for some reason that helped me. So that was my last time ever having a sip of alcohol. Was that way? Thank you. Was the last time drinking I ever had a sip of alcohol was at that wedding. And for some reason that, and I went to my therapist, I'm like, if this guy can get stop drinking, I think I can too. And so that's what I did. And so what do? When I stopped drinking, I became a drug dealer. I became a drug dealer. I was working at the Wrigley Rooftops, and I started selling weed pens. You know, those like pens you could smoke, and you know, they had the oil in them and stuff. I was serving them left and right at the Wrigley Rooftops. And I was hanging out with very inappropriate women. I was gambling. I was bartending, right? I was doing all the drunk behavior. I just took alcohol away. And of course, I wasn't telling my therapist any of this. I'm like, this is my secret stuff. And, you know, as time went on, I was there. So I was there for 6 months. No drinking. So when I came to AA for the first time, segueing into what it's like now, like, I ran into another friend that was sober. And I had known this guy for a long time. Him and I played basketball together. We grew up together and went to high school together, too. And my brother actually told me he was sober, and he kind of posted something about it and whatever. And so I asked my therapist, I'm like, should I talk to him? She's like, yeah, absolutely, right? And granted, this is like six, that's how crazy I was. Like, this is 6 months, well, it was, I still am. But at that time, it was just like total chaos. This is 6 months not drinking. This woman is telling me, like, yes, like, go seek his help now. Like, right? Like, get more help. Like, see what it's like, right? So, he started talking about AA. It was going in one ear, out the other. I'm like, yeah, okay, man. You listen to what I'm doing. You listen to me. Right? And he took me to my first AA meeting in Chicago, in Niles. It was a young people's meeting as well out there. And the guy gave a good lead. And for some reason, I walked out of that meeting with, like, a little bit of energy. It was weird. I couldn't explain it. But, like, there was some enthusiasm, like, being around other like-minded individuals who were just like me. And and then eventually he brought me to my home group in Chicago. It was in Jefferson Park on Elson and Lawrence. I don't know why I'm saying that. Not like any, well, you might know, but yeah. Yeah, and that's it. So I went to this home group and they started talking to me. And they were sharing some information for me. And at first it was going one ear out the other. And this guy, Derek, who was my previous sponsor, he was talking to me after and stuff, and at fellowship after the meeting, and we were just having conversations. He was showing me some AA information and, you know, trying to teach me about the steps and AA and the restless irritable discontent like we talked about. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's cool. And then I was telling him, he's like, are you sober? I was like, no, I'm not, you know, I've been 6 months not drinking, but, you know, I go to therapy, I still smoke weed. And he's like, huh, why do you still smoke weed? I'm just curious, like, you know. I was like, oh, well, my grandma died, and, you know. I was still bringing that up. This was like, now this is like a year removed. And my therapist said I need to decompress. And he's like, and he asked the same questions. How old was your grandma? I was like, oh, she's like almost 95. Yeah, I was like, he's like, well, that's kind of what happens, right? And I was like, yeah. He's like, well, it sounds like you're being a victim. I was like, what? Nah, dude, you got it all wrong. And, you know, I was like, walked out of there, like, man, that was a lot different than therapy. And they were very direct. And but again, for some reason, when I left there, I had some, like, energy and enthusiasm. And when I walked in to the next meeting, so that was actually my last day of smoking weed as well. So I walked into the meeting, and I walked in and for the second week, and that Derek guy was there again. This damn Derek guy. And he walked in. He's like, so still smoking weed? And I'm like, no, Derek, actually not. And he just started laughing. Like, I'm like, how dare you ask me that? Of course I don't. Like, you know what I mean? I've been smoking weed like every day. Like, I'm not trying to get into it. I was smoking it every single day, like of my entire life since like 15. And I was like very defensive on how I don't smoke weed, dude. And he just started laughing. I'm getting more pissed off. And he's laughing and laughing and getting louder. And he asked me, and yeah, I was like wearing a Wolf of Wall Street t-shirt, sweatpants, and like, you know, that's how I was living my life. Like, you know, and that's back to that analogy, the sober horse thief. Like, when I had realized, like, especially learning in AA, and that was something that I had learned, for some reason, like the third or fourth meeting I went to, it really started to click. Like, his sponsor at the time, thank you, his sponsor at the time was actually a big time drug dealer in Chicago, a cocaine dealer. And so I was like, oh, perfect. I'm going to hang out with you guys. Like, you know what I mean? Like, this is great. No accountability, nothing like that. And then obviously, like 2 months later, he fired him. And then I was like, ah, damn it. Like, I got to stop selling weed and stuff. And that's that, because I was looking to justify and rationalize all my shady behavior. Like, I didn't care. I was like, you know, when I had stopped drinking, I was just looking to try and feel better. Right, I was looking for relief from that restless, irritable, and discontent feeling, and I was using the weed, the gambling, the this, the that to feel better. But the problem was, I was actually getting sicker. I wasn't getting any better. I was getting worse, actually. And this is without alcohol. I'm getting worse. And so back to that, yeah, when being sober just isn't enough, like, yeah, that's me. And it wasn't enough. Like, I was out of my mind crazy, and I still am, but now I have tools to use. Like, that's the difference. And for some reason, that third meeting, it really started to click. And then they started talking about, like, being a service and helping others, and I started doing that. And my life really took off, and it started going great. And you know what happens when things start going great? I want to quit. I'm a natural born quitter. When things get hard, my mind just wants to quit. So that's what I did. After like 6 months of being in AA, they're like, you got to start making amends. And I'm like, I'm not doing that. All right, steps. Yeah. I'm like, I sell that stuff fair and square. Like, there's no way. Like, let bygones be bygones. Just bury it. You know what I mean? And that's how I live my life. Like, I do something wrong and I just sweep it under the rug. After that 6 months, I went right back to that shady behavior again. Like, hanging out with drug dealers, but not drinking and, like, doing all the shady stuff. And I was crazy. And so both times I made it to AA, I wasn't drinking either time. Like, that's just my experience. Like, I stopped drinking and my life still sucks, right? Like, I really wish for me, and this is just my experience of drinking was like literally my solution to calm me down. But the problem was there were so many consequences with my drinking. It just blew apart like crazy every time I drank. So obviously that's a problem. But here's the bigger problem. When I stopped drinking, I'm still crazy. And I didn't know how to slow down my mind. It went so fast. Like, oh my God, does she like me? How tall am I? What kind of job do I have? Like, what's going on here? Like, I'm always like, my mind just spun out of control. And I didn't know how to get out of it. I was looking for any way to get out of it. And that's why I made my way back to AA, luckily. Actually, my sponsor had called me just to see how I was doing. And I was like, not good. And for some reason, like, I was able to get honest at that point. I was like, I'm not doing good. Like, I'm 5 months removed from AA. I got all this AA information in my head about the steps and being a service and helping others and doing none of it for 5 months. That's a scary place to be. That's like bone on bone. That's like, it's just scary. And with no relief valve at all. And, you know, I made it back to the group and they were nice enough to bring me back in. And I really attacked it head on. I actually took the step seriously and I started doing this stuff. And, you know, my life started to change. Like, and it was changing even the first time. Like, I was back in school. I was getting A's. You guys heard me earlier. I was cheating and failing. Like, I was getting A's without cheating. It was crazy. I was like, what the hell is going on? Like, my life was getting dramatically better. I had a job. I was, like, getting health insurance. I was, like, starting to save a little money. Like, my life was starting to get better, right? I just, you know, I thought I deserved a break, you know? That's where my mind goes. And There was a line that from AA history where Bill Wilson was talking to his spiritual advisor, Father Ed Dolly, and he asked him about that before. When can alcoholics take a break? He said, never. Like, you're going to be an alcoholic forever. I'm like, oh, man, that sucks. That's to me, and I'm almost, if I make it to next February, February 5th, I'll have 7 years, right? And one thing I noticed is that, like, I'm going to be an alcoholic now and forever. Like, I've tried, and still to this day when I wake up, the last thing I want to be is an alcoholic. Like, I do not want to be a drunk. Like, I wouldn't wish it upon my worst enemy. I really wouldn't. But here's the cool thing, though, is that AA, for me at least, and if you're new, it gave me a solution. It gave me a way out, right? You could tell I'm still crazy, but I don't live in that insanity anymore, right? Like, I actually have what they call peace of mind. And I didn't know. Thank you. I'm almost done. So I actually have what they call peace of mind, and I wasn't. I was looking for so many other ways to try to get my mind quiet down. And I'm so grateful today that, and I thank God on a daily basis that I actually have the information in AA to enjoy my life, right? Like, I moved here. In my life, it was still crazy. Like, there was still crazy stuff happening. 5 years sober, I took a job with a cokehead. Like, he was my cousin. Like, because he's like wanted to start a company, a logistics company. I'm like, yeah, I'm in. And then it's like, well, Jack's like, oh, my brother, you know, he's got a coke problem. Ah, I don't care. He'll be fine. Like, you know what I mean? Shocker, he didn't pay us. He used all the money that got invested to him to start this business on drugs. What a shocker, right? I'm not that smart, obviously. So this is like, I'm still crazy. Like, I'm not like cured of this thing at all. There's no, from at least my experience and what I've learned here, there's no cure-all. There's no panacea. There's no like magic thing. What I have is a daily reprieve today. And my day looks a lot like, you know, I moved here with some of these guys, right? I got sponsees. If you got a problem with me, take it up with them after. They're in the second row to the left. I'm just kidding. But anyways, yeah, like that, it's made my life full today. It's given me purpose. Like, AA has given me purpose today. And I started, it was suggested to me early on, like, start talking to new people, man. And I started doing that. My first week of sobriety, I'm talking to new guys and like bringing guys to meetings and stuff. And here I am almost 7 years later and I'm still here. And I was like, well, they're like, why would you do that? And in my head, I'm like, why would I do that? But then the math started kicking into my head. Like, okay, my sponsor has 20 years. He suggested that. His sponsor has 43 years. His sponsor has 55. Huh, maybe I should just do that. Like, but my mind, see, that's how sick I am. Like, when I had left AA, I knew all that. But I was like, they don't know what they're talking about, right? It's just like someone who's sick with cancer, and the doctor's like, here, if you do this, this, and this, you'll get a lot better. And then a normal person, they just go and do that. Me, I'm like, that's not going to work for me. I got stuff, right? I got my own thing here, right? Because I'm ego-driven. I have a big ego. So it's hard to deflate that. And AA has given me tools on how to do that. I actually have a real solution today, right? And my experience is, and I want to be clear about that, my experience is not the experience whatsoever, right? Everybody has their own experience, and everybody has what works for them. And I think that's awesome, right? I just know for me today, I actually have something that works for me. And, it truly is a blessing. I thank my sponsor and the people back in Chicago. So I'll wrap it up with that. Thank you again for asking me to speak. I really appreciate it. And that's all I got. Thanks.